ओम विष्णु बदाय कृष्ण प्रसाय भूतरे श्रीमती भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नितनामने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चाचार देशधारिणे. So I want to thank Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu for arranging for me to come here. I met him in Udupi, where he is getting treatment at our Ayurvedic treatment center, established primarily to help devotees who have chronic problems. I was one of the first patients there. We should be very careful. This is a machine given by Krishna, and we're not going to talk about it today, but in the course of the talk, there'll be some instances which Srila Prabhupada talked to me about my health. It was of grave importance to him. In fact, he told Dhananjaya Prabhu that the health comes before the sadhana. Not that actually we should use ill health for a reason not to follow sadhana. But if we have ill health, then those of us who neglected this advice can understand that we will feel a special kind of frustration and lamentation that, oh, we want to give everything to Krishna, but now we have to deal with this inconvenience, which is actually a convenience for us. I was telling Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu that I've started this project of writing this book some 5 years ago, and I stalled out a bit. Different reasons, too many books on my mind, but also that I was a little bit isolated in Udupi, and there's a special enthusiasm that we feel when we discuss Krishna consciousness, and also including about our experiences with Srila Prabhupada. So it's very nice to be here. I'd heard so much about Radha Des, and so much is nice here. Very enthusing. Nice to learn about the college activities and see the students, how they combine their studies and Krishna consciousness, and how very nice graduation ceremony. One thing I should preface this class, it's actually not a class, I'd rather call it talks. Class is a little formal. Class will be there within the talks. Is that, first of all, I do not regard myself by having had Srila Prabhupada's association as being more fortunate in any way than the fortune available to all of those who follow Srila Prabhupada. In fact, I see not only amongst my godbrothers and godsisters, but amongst second, and now we're starting third generation, I think, devotees, children, even children who have not initiated, some who are on super excellent platform. And not just amongst the men, but sometimes even more amongst the ladies. We don't want to have a competition here. We find super excellent devotional service. Many times this is amongst devotees who are just ordinary rank and file, who are doing humble, unspoken, unpraised devotional service, but are doing it so fervently that we can do nothing else but conclude that they are actually already pure devotees, and they exhibit all of those signs given in Nectar of Devotion. I think it's important to mention that, because part of my speaking is for me to discover my own fortune. Srila Prabhupada gives an example. I don't remember if it's in the Krishna book, but he's speaking about the Krishna book. Is that when Lord Krishna was here on this planet, though he exhibited super excellent pastimes that one seeing it, one has to clearly understand that he is no ordinary human being. All of his fantastic, amazing, incredible, unsurpassed activities, like lifting Govardhan Hill for 7 days with the pinky. Actually, it's so incredible, so fantastic that our mind and our intelligence has a great difficulty actually comprehending how great these activities are. How big was Putana Asura? How big was Agasura? These are not just ordinary street thugs. They're huge in frame, and our little intelligence has a difficulty to... But when Krishna was personally present, we would think, oh, it was obvious. Everyone should have understood that Krishna is God, or at least the greatest being, which means concluding that he is God. The Srila Prabhupada comments that actually only 5% of the persons who were on the planet could comprehend in the proper way that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although we should never indicate that Srila Prabhupada is other than who he is, still he exhibited super excellent power and activity as Lord Sri Krishna's representative. And when I joined the temple in Buffalo, I actually had no plan to become a member of the Krishna consciousness movement. I'll talk about that a little because it's essential for the introduction for the 6 days of talks to see what my relationship was and is by Srila Prabhupada's own design. Rupa Nuga Prabhu was an excellent teacher on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, very excellent, and prepared me in a way that when I got the opportunity to be with Srila Prabhupada, I found very identical ways that my temple president and later GBC had dealt with me. And I think this is also important to talk about. And so I wanted to begin today's talk by reading a letter. After reading the letter, I'll give you some interesting background behind the letter, which I only thought about later. And this, I was initiated by letter. I had not met Srila Prabhupada. In fact, I met Srila Prabhupada only about 2 years after, somehow or other, moving into the temple. I had planned to move into the temple and become like a life member. I had lived in India before for 2 years. And when I reached India, I had no intention. It was very different than, say, His Holiness Radhanath Swami's intention to go to India, but somewhat parallel. I went to India, it was a fluke. There's no flukes, there's no accidents, actually. We can see that actually everything that's happening to us, if we review our life after we get the fortune of coming to the shelter of Krishna consciousness, we can see that not just many things, but not just everything, but everything in precise detail is rearranged. We have our independence, and rearranged by Krishna, still giving us our independence, but with Krishna's constant vigilance leading us back to Godhead. So I had a plan. Was not that, it has some authorization in Bhagavad Gita to do humanitarian work with the idea that by doing humanitarian work I could get an idea what was the purpose of life. This came into my mind for some reason. We can understand the some reason is that Krishna gave me some reason to think, oh, we should find out the purpose. So I wound up in India, and although the culture of India, the Krishna consciousness, has become quite, especially before Prabhupada returned with his devotees, quite diluted and quite confused, especially the impersonalism and voidism that people have clung to more lately. So I was in India, and there was an accident. Accidentally got introduced to something spiritual. I was riding these buses and they were very horrendous. It was, if you go to India today, and Anuttam was laughing, but you have no idea what the buses were like in 1966. So there I was in India with no real spiritual aim, but I thought that I should, you know, avail of whatever I can learn. Otherwise, what was the good? I was there to give to others, but what I was going to take was some understanding of the culture. They taught the language. And so anything I could find or ask about, I was doing that. But this was unusual. I was riding this bus, and there were no springs in the bus at all. And there were no shock absorbers in the bus at all. And it was 85 kilometers over dirt roads. And the roads were so dusty that really the bus was filled with dust. So this is a very old bus, and there's no padding on the seats. And there were so many holes in the road, it's hard to say that there was a road. It was just bumping along. This was in a remotest region of India. And the road, the first 17 kilometers, the bus would be turning, and so you just never know what's going to happen because there's caverns, and there are also wild buffaloes running around that they never saw them, but sometimes they would bash the bus and the bus would fall down, and so many things. So this was my first ride in the bus going to a place called Visakhapatnam, and there's no advertisement, and I was trying to read a book to divert my mind, but it was so bumpy I couldn't read. And around the top of the bus there was something written in the language, which is called Telugu, which was compulsory for me to read, be able to read before I was allowed to come to India. You had to graduate in the language as fluent or fluent enough. So I was just struggling in this bus ride, and I start to read the first word. It was written in a continuous loop, you know, so I couldn't tell where it began, and I think someone already gets the point. I read the word Rama, and then Rama, Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare. So this is how I got introduced to the chanting. Everybody has an experience. It says that we have three kinds of gurus in the process of devotional life. We have a Diksha Guru, whom we maintain a special relationship with, and he often, usually, will give siksha. And there's a siksha guru who guides us, and Prabhupada introduced me to this concept or reinforced this concept in this letter from him. And he guides us, and all the way. We may have many siksha gurus or just one or two in addition to the siksha we get from our diksha guru. And then we have a pravesh darshatmaka guru, the one who pravesh darshatmaka, the one who opens the door. So in my case, my guru is a bus. I'm proud to say and lucky to say, by accident. So it really wasn't an accident. I, after this occasion, I went back to the hill station, the tribal area. It's quite an experience, but I won't get diverted and talk about it. It was an amazing experience living with the aboriginals, the tribals. They, even though they were supposed to be the most degraded in the level of the Varnashrama system, they're outside the Varnashrama system. In the village where I used to spend the most amount of time, when the men and women got married, although they were almost naked persons, the men slept in one area all together, and the women slept in the other, and they never slept together except for procreation, which happened after they would have the permission or decision of the village, and then there was a small little room that would go to do their business, and that was it. They didn't have that interest, and they were aboriginals, something to tell us where our culture has gone. So I asked my friend, he was one of my guides, my main guide for spiritual discussion, the Virabhadra Rao, I said, what is this? Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. I said, where does it begin, where does it end? Because it didn't seem to begin or end anywhere. And I said, well, if you're a Ramanuja, then it begins with Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And if you're a Madhvat, then it begins with Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And there's different people following it. He says, but it doesn't matter where it begins or ends. It's called the Maha Mantra. Then he explained a little bit about it. And he said, you know, 500 years ago, the Lord came in a golden form, and he passed through Visakhapatnam, chanting and dancing, and he actually visited a great holy temple called Simhachalam. He says, next time you might want to go and visit there. So then next time I had time or an idea to take a trip, I said, you know, where should I go? As there was really not much activity living in the forest, and I wanted to get some experience, something place to go. So he said, you could go visit that Simhachalam temple. He said, but if you go, I can give you some suggestions what you can do there. So he said, there's a very nice mantra you can chant. Govinda Jaya Jaya, Gopala Jaya Jaya, Radha Ramana Hari, Govinda Jaya Jaya. And you walk around, this is called parikram, you circumambulate the temple three times, and then you can offer something to the god. But you won't be able to see him because he's covered in sandalwood. And once a year there's a festival, but it's very crowded. And so I did that. And all by accident, right? So this is just a comment, because Srila Prabhupada very often talks about the Indian culture. And really what he's talking about is not the Indian culture of the song and dance and the Bharatanatyaka or the Odessa or Odessi, none of that really. He's talking about the culture of Krishna consciousness that is a person learns just as part of growing up in India. And even though I came from such a different background, by the time I came back to America, I really could say I was a different person and really felt out of place. I was trying to find a place to live. That's why I selected the Hare Krishna Ashram, hoping that they were it, to what I had learned in India. So interestingly enough, and I only realized this many years later, the day that I was initiated was Nrisimha Chaturdasi, although it was sent to him before, so I had worshipped Lord Nrisimha. Oh, I forgot to say one thing, because it's the beginning of my experience of Srila Prabhupada. The day after going to Lord Nrisimha's temple, I came back, and India is a very interesting place. Even when there were no movies available, there was no TV, no internet, no radios actually, hardly any. Maybe every two or three villages had a radio and everyone would sometimes listen, but they weren't much interested. But what people were very interested in doing is getting the newspaper. So even though we were in the remote, very remote place, somehow or other, that bus would come and bring the newspaper. And then people would grab it first thing, and the first thing in the morning, instead of Bhagavatam, they read the newspaper. So the next morning, I came to my friend, he was getting the newspaper, and I was looking at it, it was the Statesman, I believe. And there was an article on reading the different articles, and on the bottom right-hand side, there was an article, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami returns to India. So some special connection with Lord Nrisimha and Srila Prabhupada that by, although I had become very close to meeting Srila Prabhupada many times before. In fact, in 1966, September, I think it was like September 7th, I was supposed to be going to India and didn't get my visa. Everyone else got the visa, and I was left alone in New York City. And I walked from Central Park to where the Staten Island Ferry is, and I walked down Broadway and then Fifth Avenue, and then I walked down to Fourth Park, Washington Square Park, and then I walked down Second Avenue, and when I was on Second Avenue and Second Street, an idea came into my mind that I have to find an Indian restaurant. I have to get Indian food. I'm going to India. I should eat Indian food. And I stopped outside a store, which I only understood later was 26 Second Avenue. Then I went and took the Staten Island Ferry and came back. And then a second time, I sat, there's a little park opposite that area, and I sat there thinking, I really have to find an Indian restaurant. It's really important to find an Indian restaurant. And it wasn't that I really liked Indian food that much, but I was just thinking, I'm going to India. And then I went outside 26 Second Avenue and no one was there. So I take this also that one has to have had some fortune to even know about the pure devotee. Because until I was sent by, chanted Hare Krishna and then met this person who was not actually a pure Vaishnava, but he was a Vaishnava by characteristics, then chanted and went to Nrisimhadeva. Then the next day I got the chance to hear about Srila Prabhupada. And the gentleman who I was with said, yes, he is a very, very good, very, very good sannyasi. So a few years later, I was in the temple and the temple president gave me a test for becoming initiated. The test was that I should go to a university and all alone should stand up, and with the drum, the devotees could help me with kartals, lead a kirtan, assemble at least 200 to 300 people, and then stand up and give a talk for 20 minutes, and then answer the questions, and he would be there and listen. And if I could give the talk and then answer all the questions correctly, he said, that might be suitable for recommendation for first initiation. He said, I'm being lenient on you. You should know about the second initiation test. So this is the letter, and I think it's very valuable. Not that it was written specifically to me, but it's a very beautiful letter. And Srila Prabhupada says, I'm glad to accept you as my initiated student, and your spiritual name is Tejos. Actually, it was written T-E-J-O-S. The secretary misspelled it. Tejos means powerful. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj pointed out to Shukadev Goswami that Lord Krishna is Tejos. It's actually Tejas, but Prabhupada in his Bengali accent would say Tejos. Tejos. Sometimes we just call me Tejas. Or the incomparable, supreme, powerful personality of Godhead. I am returning your beads, enclosed here with duly chanted upon me. Please follow the rules and regulations for advancing in Krishna consciousness, beginning with strict observance of the four restrictions and chanting daily the prescribed number of 16 rounds of the beads, and you will grow strong in spiritual strength. So I'm going to go through the sentences. Study our literatures with the cooperation of your god brothers and sisters in Buffalo. So this is Srila Prabhupada's first instruction to me, and actually to our movement. For many, many reasons, Prabhupada was very contemplative of and had many reasons for everything he did. For many reasons, he, from the very beginning, put a great emphasis, and here he put it in writing, that we should advance in Krishna consciousness in the association of the devotees around us. And any questions you may have may be submitted to Srimad Rupanuga for answering. So far Prabhupada's absenting himself in the relationship, not that he's not there. He's accepted me as a student, but how to be a student is to study an association of sisters and brothers, devotees. And then if I had a question, if they can't solve it, to go to the temple president. So in this way, always find some engagement in Krishna's service and you will be supremely happy and successful in your life. Always follow the prescribed program of Krishna consciousness as it has been established by the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada could easily have said here, me? But this will be one of the main themes in my describing my study of Srila Prabhupada, as I had the great fortune to be with him where he was just acting naturally, how Srila Prabhupada really is extraordinarily humble, is not even the word to say it, thinking of himself as the most ordinary person, but willing to do the most extraordinary work for his spiritual master. He doesn't say me. We, almost everybody would say, listen to me. But he says, as the spiritual master. I'll just give you I'll stop and give something that came to mind. I won't do it too often. It wasn't something that I experienced. It was something that Ranjit Prabhu, who used to, he started the Bhaktivedanta archives with two other devotees. Ranjit Prabhu came into Srila Prabhupada's room in Vrindavan, and as some people are more outspoken, I was the least outspoken in the history of those around Srila Prabhupada, quiet and sat in the back. But Ranjit Prabhu, seeing Srila Prabhupada there, and Prabhupada was alone, Ranjit Prabhu said, Jai Srila Prabhupada. And as Ranjit Prabhu was coming down to do his obeisances, he heard a resonating echo, Jai Srila Prabhupada. And Ranjit Prabhu was humble. He said, for a fraction of a second, he wondered, why is Srila Prabhupada saying this about himself? Then he realized that actually Srila Prabhupada didn't think that he is Srila Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada heard Jaya Srila Prabhupada, he just thought of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. It's just an interesting side comment. Thus executing your prescribed duties in the loving service of the Lord, he will reveal himself to you in proportion to your sincere efforts to satisfy him only. So now you are Krishna's servant. He didn't say my servant. He didn't say my disciple. And if you give your life completely over to him, he, Tejas, the all-powerful Lord, will protect you from all dangers in all circumstances. Please always chant Hare Krishna and without offense, be happy. Now, take this good opportunity to learn how to practically prosecute Krishna consciousness movement. Jai Jai. So that you may help start new centers for expanding our program to every nook and corner, village and city. So this is the initiation that Prabhupada gave us. This is the way Srila Prabhupada started this movement, and throughout, when he had personal dealings with devotees, none of us were, whimpering babies. He gives the direction and he gives a very clear future. And in Buffalo Temple, if you were there for more than 6 months, we'd begin to wonder why. 6 months was a very old devotee. In 6 months, we're wondering why you have not gone out to start a center, at least to be the assistant to a new center. And Srila Prabhupada did this all the time. Begavan Prabhu in Sweden, he joined in Bombay, and within 3 or 4 weeks, Srila Prabhupada discussed with him which center, where is he going to go to open a preaching center. So we sometimes think, oh, I'm a new devotee. As we were talking about in the graduation ceremony, what responsibility we will take in our Krishna conscious life. Of course, the mood of people have changed. People have become actually emotionally weakened by the culture, external culture. And we think that children are not capable of taking responsibility, but at least in my generation, or maybe the preceding generation, the parents looked on the child, although they gave them childhood leniency, we were given responsibility for our actions and, you know, looked forward to life that at some point we'll get married and we should figure out how to earn a livelihood. And this was early in childhood, at least it was in most cases. Help Rupa Nuga Prabhu in the Buffalo Temple or otherwise may be advised to you that is the best program from now to become very well trained in Krishna consciousness, and then you can preach. So within 10 days of moving into the temple, well before this, actually I was already the temple president before I was initiated, I was made the cook, and I have an extreme passion for cooking. That's an understatement. Even in my childhood, I learned to cook by the time I was 8. I could cook many things, pastries, strudels, pies. And as soon as I learned to bake, then I used to bake so much, and I'd go to all the friends and relatives and anybody we knew, there would be so much. And then I cooked in school, and all the students hated me, but the teacher loved me. It didn't make it helpful that the teacher loved me. And when she would teach cooking, then she would just make a beeline over to my stove and taste it. So the students conspired against me, especially one who is, and they replaced the sugar. We were going to make cakes, and I had made cake many times, so they replaced the sugar. And it looks the same in the West, the sugar and the salt. And so I made a cake, and the teacher didn't hesitate. She took a huge mouthful. She did. Anyway, so I loved cooking. And even though I was not initiated, I had been in the temple for 10 days, but we needed a cook. And I had been a vegetarian for many years and fairly precisely following the regulated principles. So I was made the head cook, 5 meals a day. And also, just so those of you think you have hard time, although some people here do 10 people's work, I was not only made the head cook, but then I had to do all the shopping, and it was required of everybody in the temple, minimum, you had to go out on Sankirtan for 4 hours a day. At least 3, temple president, 2 hours of street Sankirtan and 2 hours of special preaching outside. No laxity. And I followed this throughout. Some people complained that I was, someone said that I was something more than strict temple president, but this was what we were taught. So let me tell you the next stage. I was there in Buffalo, and Srila Prabhupada started the India program just about that time. He created the GBC. So then when my temple president was made GBC, even though I was the most junior devotee there because I had some material experience and some background, he made me the temple president. And in Buffalo Temple, there was no resentment ever amongst devotees. There was one devotee, his name was Nityananda. He was a little out of place, a little too much in the mode of passion. But the rest of us, if you talk to any of the devotees who ever come here from Buffalo, we were totally homogeneous. Even though I was temple president, I only had one privilege. And when I was made temple president, when Rupanuga was become the GBCs, I need a temple president. And you show some capability to take responsibility. Though everyone was taking responsibility. He said, you will only have one privilege as temple president. And I don't know if you'd ever guess what that privilege was. What do you think was the privilege? Mahaprasadam. See, that's the first thing that comes to mind. You'll like the next story. Almost every event has something to do with prasadam. So, no, really not. Actually, I hardly ever got to take Mahaprasadam. If you ever have Bhakti Bringa Govinda Maharaj ever come, he was the most extraordinary devotee. He joined just like 2 months before I left. And he can still remember a feast that I made in July of 1971. Not only the feast, he remembers every part of the preparation. It's very funny. And he was one of our most extraordinary devotees. I had a rocking chair in my room. And I'd actually sit in that rocking chair and pretend I was everybody's bigger brother. or sometimes father or grandfather, and they came to me like that. And there's a reason we cultivated that relationship. And but he used to come to me every day. And not only every day, sometimes he started coming to me two or three times a day, because I told the devotees, if you have any difficulty, come and talk to me. I will talk. It's very good, you know, devotees should talk. And so different devotees would come, hardly ever, but he started coming to me and he said, you know, I'm having these problems with my mind. I think I'm falling in Maya. I said, you know, the best antidote for Maya is prasadam. But what I asked him to do was to close his eyes, because all the Mahaprasadam, especially Simply Wonderful, it was such a cold place, Buffalo, that the temperature never went above 70 degrees Fahrenheit or 20 degrees Celsius. Even in the summer, the building was like 65 or 60 degrees. So we could store Simply Wonderfuls. And what I would do is take them from the offering and put them, they were like a duplex with three stories. So I put them on four stories of the building in little boxes. When devotees would feel sad, I would give them. But he had to close his eyes. So he would close his eyes and open his mouth. And then I would give him a Simply Wonderful. Then he would come back 3 or 4 hours later. He says, Prabhu, Prabhu Tejas, I'm in such Maya. I said, again? He wouldn't wait. He'd just close his eyes and open his mouth, you know, like a little bird. If you say, who is your papa? He might remember. Now the devotees, we were all so homogeneous that anyone would do anything for anyone. There was such a bond because we actually surrendered to each other, and then everyone actually took care of each other. And the temple president was given one privilege, not that Mahaprasadam, which I kept in boxes, but he was given the privilege that he alone, even if a sannyasi came, even if a GBC came, we had few sannyasis, we had 12 GBCs, even if a GBC came, even if a Brahmin was there, even if a devotee from the 1966 group came, only Tejas had this privilege, and he could deny them and not even offer this privilege. Very strict. He says, this is your unequivocal, absolute privilege, and you don't have to give it to anybody, and that was to serve the prasadam meals. And I was so greedy for that. No one could get it away from me. Only on Sundays, and then Gunagrahi Prabhu, he was the best. If you did something extraordinary, I'd let you serve prasadam. So I was not chosen to go in the 1970 group, because I had just taken over as temple president, and Rupanuga was just being a GBC, and then he had an accident, which semi-crippled him for a few months. And then there was Srila Prabhupada requested again that if the temples could spare someone to go to India, that would be appreciated, because Srila Prabhupada really wanted to open temples and do the India preaching for reasons that we could not really all understand. We had already introduced a life membership program. Prabhupada had started that in India, and then asked that the devotees begin it in America. We were probably the first temple to make donor and patron and subscriber members in Buffalo. And there was an instruction that 50% should go to the BBT and be given for the persons who paid the amount. It was $1,111 for a life member, $555 for a donor member, $222 for a subscriber member, and $11 for an annual membership. So we would give half to the BBT and half to the some temple project, not for maintenance. Prabhupada was clear on that. So in response to Srila Prabhupada's second request, Rupanuga Prabhu discussed with me that there were sufficient devotees to take over, and he was more clear with his GBC work, and so he asked if I was willing to go to India, and I said yes. So then Srila Prabhupada was coming in July of 19 71 to New York, and there was, he had been away for a very long time, and there were going to be big initiations, huge mass initiations, and he would introduce me to Srila Prabhupada to see if he would accept me to come to India. So that happened, and this was the first time I was going to meet Srila Prabhupada. You have to understand what it was like in 1969, 70s, even 71. There were no cassette tape recorders. There were no CDs. We only had one film, an 8mm film of Srila Prabhupada, which we saw one time. Someone brought it. And we had a reel-to-reel huge playing machine in which there were two or three lectures of Srila Prabhupada. We had very few books. And there weren't many devotees who told Prabhupada pastimes, there were no books on Srila Prabhupada. The image that we, most of us held, was Srila Prabhupada was this gigantic acharya. In our words, he would exactly like to hear it, in the same magnitude as Madhava Acharya, huge, important acharya, and he was very grave. Although he was humorous, he was very strict. And Rupanuga Prabhu was very grave. He was humorous, but very strict. So I didn't know what to really expect when I first met Srila Prabhupada. And I was of the grave, more of a grave nature, although, you know, I can be humorous, but I was of a grave nature. And Rupanuga was grave, and everybody was grave. And so I didn't know. And I was brought into the room, and Prabhupada was sitting there on an asana, and Rupanuga said, "This is Tejasdas, he's been the president, and he was in India before." So when Prabhupada heard India and saw me sitting there, he said, "I would like to discuss about the life membership program in India." No, not in India. "I would like to discuss about the life membership program. Call all the big-bigs." And Prabhupada paused. "Wherever they are sleeping, go wake them up." So, you know, I'm giving a comment here. In the book, it will be a little more different, but because I'm speaking, I was really like almost shocked. Shock is not the word, really, super surprised, because I was expecting, you know, super gravity. And though I knew Prabhupada had a sense of humor, I didn't have a clue that he could be sarcastic. And then, so Rupanuga Prabhu, and I went all over the temple, and you know, all there were temple presidents and GBCs and leaders, and we found them, literally. This is like totally literal. They were all sleeping. So we collected them, and you know, they were rubbing their eyes and came stumbling in. And then Srila Prabhupada began to speak. He says, "We have started this life membership program to distribute our books." And Srila Prabhupada talked about Jagannath Puri and the feeding of people in India. 54 times a day they make feasts in Jagannath Puri. And he introduced this. He said that we take 1,111 rupees and we give them 250 rupees of books. Actually, the perceived value is 500 rupees, their retail value. Prabhupada didn't mention that. And then Prabhupada paused and he said, "Very good business." He says, "We give them 1,000 rupees of books. We give them, they give us 1,000 rupees and we give them 250 rupees of books." And Prabhupada said the second time, "Very good business." And they invite us to their houses and we have a program and they give us a feast. He says, "They give us 1,000 rupees and a feast and we give them the books." And Prabhupada said, "Very good business." And in this way, we are eating our way back to Godhead. So I had 10 days to get to London. Rupanuga asked Srila Prabhupada after I left, and he approved that I should come to India. And he said, "Send him at once, have him meet me in London." So I wanted to get there by Rath Yatra in August 71, but there was not enough time. So I got there just after Rath Yatra. And I was very nervous about actually meeting Srila Prabhupada. I had written a letter saying what I wanted to do. And nothing that Srila Prabhupada had done before. He seemed always very kind, and we would go on walks with him. And but I felt very not intimidated in the sense of anything Prabhupada had done, but here was a really great personality, and what can I do? I'm very impure, and I'm coming before a very pure person. And actually, this feeling lasted with me up to the last day that I was with Srila Prabhupada, a feeling awkward in his presence, even though, as you'll hear, he was always very relaxed and accommodating, and you'll hear this now. So I found Shyamasundara Prabhu was there, and he brought me into the room to meet Srila Prabhupada. And I was looking at Srila Prabhupada, and he said, "What do you want?" So then I tried to say something, and I couldn't say anything. I actually just opened my mouth and couldn't say anything. Then he says, "What does he want?" And Shyamasundara tried to get me to talk, and I was stumbling over my words. And then he said, "Well, do you take him out and find out what he wants, and when he's ready, have him come back." So I prepared myself, and Shyamasundara says, "Don't worry, it happens to many of us. Even after we're around him, we feel, you know, so overawed by his greatness that sometimes it's difficult." He was very assuring. And so then I prepared myself a second time, my second adventure. And I came in, and just as I was about to sit down, Srila Prabhupada said, and I had done my obeisances, Srila Prabhupada said, "I would like a glass of water." So next to Srila Prabhupada was a table. Shyamasundara had made that table. It was made of white oak, and it had, I believe, a glass top. And on that table was a pitcher and a glass next to it for the water. And so I went to get the glass, and it was empty, and I started to try to pour the pitcher. And Srila Prabhupada was looking at me, but the way he looked at me was just, you know, very gently. And I felt so nervous. I had been a waiter before, and I could carry 12 cups of tea or coffee. We're not supposed to talk about that, but without spilling a drop, I could carry them. I had a very steady hand in those days. So, but I was so nervous that I was shaking in the water was getting. So Srila Prabhupada was still looking at me. He didn't stop looking at me, but he didn't change his expression. He just looked at me. And then he looked up a little, and then so I carried the big table toward the back of the room with my back to Srila Prabhupada. Then I somehow felt a little more, you know, calm, and I poured the water into the glass. Then I picked up the glass, and my hand was shaking. Srila Prabhupada was looking at me. And a whole while, there was no, everybody laughed, and I laugh about it. And what was sight it was. But it gets worse. So, but Srila Prabhupada never, the expression on his face was just like very gentle. He was just looking at me, waiting for his water. He wasn't saying anything. All this took a few minutes. So then I decided the only way I can do it, I was quite strong having been a carpenter and a farmer, and it was a heavy table, probably weighed at least 25 or 30 kgs. So I put 20 kgs at least. I put the glass down, and then I was carrying the whole big table towards him. And it was such a sight. I can imagine if someone was doing that to me. This thing is like a gorilla. And then Prabhupada waited, and I set the table down again, and then he picked up the glass, and he drank the whole glass of water. And then he said, "So what do you want?" And then I explained, I handed the letter, and somehow I explained that I had been in India before, I had been preaching in the villages, of India, and I knew Telugu, I knew some Hindi. I mentioned to Srila Prabhupada that I had heard that they had a problem with accounting and cooking. And Srila Prabhupada looked at Shyamasundara and looked at me. He says, I have not heard that. And he looked at Shyamasundara, have you heard that? And Shyamasundara said, no. So one thing you should know before I tell you what happened next is that in 1968, I left India on my first trip to India. And I had a very good experience. I was never sick the first time I was in India, except one time I got a little water problem, and one time I got poisoned by touching cashew nuts out of curiosity. But when I came to Delhi for leaving in 1968, I became really sick, and this was June, it was the summertime, very hot, you know, 45, 50 degrees, 52 degree weather. And I started to feel like really cold, and I had shaking. And I was actually invited by seven different governments, agencies, and different governments, including the United Nations. So there was ample money and budget and facility, and they sent me to private doctors, some of them trained in the West, and so there was an American doctor on staff, and I went to All India Medical Institute, got test after test, and it was so many tests, and they said, there's nothing wrong with you. They couldn't get an idea what was wrong with me. I finally had enough energy. It was Krishna's intervention. I was going to go and become a disciple of the Dalai Lama, and I would have been there in 1968 when 69, but Krishna intervened. So I got in the plane. There was a very small airport at that time in Delhi, and I looked out in the window, and I didn't pray to God very often. I believed in God more by coming to India, and I didn't identify him strictly as Krishna, but in all the ways I prayed. I was looking out and I said, my dear Lord, I said, please never again allow me to come to this city. And then they closed the door, and you know how there's a sound when the hatch is latched and you feel the first compression a little. And just then my entire sickness disappeared. It was quite amazing. I was completely healthy. After the prayer, and then the latch was sealed. So it really confirmed to me that I should never come to this city. So I was looking at Srila Prabhupada, and he looked at me, and he said, I would like you to come to Delhi. Actually, it got so bad later on, Prabhupada had a saying, he says, Tejas is Delhi, Delhi is Tejas. So I thought, and I'll leave you with this because we run out of our time, I thought, not only does Srila Prabhupada have this, interesting sense of humor, but now I understand that Srila Prabhupada represents the super soul, and the super soul has an interesting sense of humor. So whatever we are required to do, and it didn't end there, I had made three vows in life. This was the first of having to go to Delhi. So I thought, oh, I never wanted to go to Delhi. The one thing I specifically, intensely never wanted to do, Krishna is giving. So I said to Srila Prabhupada, yes. So any questions on anything or any comments? Then? All right, thank you all. Oh, yes. Oh yes, curiosity kills the cat. The cashew nut, there's a fruit, and at the end of the fruit, the cashew nut grows, and it's inside a hard shell, not a hard shell, but it's it's not hard like a nut, it's pulpy, but it's fleshy, but very hard flesh, like 10 times harder 20 times harder than the flesh of an orange, say. Very hard. You can just about cut it with a knife with great difficulty. But it's still not like a nut itself. And that acid in there is 100 times diluted to make India ink. I don't know if you can get it anymore. India ink is indelible ink. Now they use chemicals. But it used to be before the chemical industry was so developed, they'd take this one drop of India, this cashew juice, and put it in a 100 times dilution of water. And it's so indelible, even then it can irritate the skin very slightly. But at 50:1, it definitely irritates the skin. And in pure form, it just starts like burning off all the skin. And the villagers were sitting around laughing as I was washing my hands to try to get it off. And then they watched as I took a bath 2 hours later and laughed. And then my whole, anyway, another story of the intensity. But I felt Delhi was worse than that. Anything else? So I hope this all benefits you, and we'll get more deep into Srila Prabhupada's kindness to me and how he was very unassuming and his various instructions. Thank you for letting me speak. Please forgive any offenses. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada ki.